I think he's lurking.
He's in the dark. He's going in the basement.
It'd be funny if he like fell over.
Oh my god.
Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 4 of the Short Corner podcast. Today we're going to be reviewing the 2-1 win away against Roma, a huge win at Stadio Olimpico. Joined with me as always is Naeem.
Forza Milan, guys.
Sam here.
Hello, guys. Just wanted to let you know I just got the last 30 minutes.
Yeah, Sam here only caught the last 30 minutes of the match, so that's why some of his knowledge of the game might not be as accurate. And then Joe, of course.
Great to be back. As always, finally after a win, it feels like this podcast has kind of like cursed Milan maybe a little bit. But it's good to know that's not the case. And yeah, it's great. It's good to be back.
Yeah, the jinx is over. And obviously, Riz also here, and he's going to introduce our special guest.
Hello, everyone. So today we have a special guest. You probably heard his name quite a few times in the last few podcasts that we have released. Always asking questions. Great guy. Great opinions. Just a lovely guy, as I said. So from South Africa, we have Farinho. So thank you, Farinho, for being here.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys, for having me. I appreciate all the good work you do. It's really entertaining content, and I recommend anyone follow you.
Thank you. And for those who don't know, Farinha, I believe, is it right to say you're a graphic designer?
Yeah, you can say that.
Yeah, so yeah. He does some amazing work. We'll leave all of his work and socials in the YouTube description, so make sure you guys follow him. So yeah, let's get started. So we played Roma 1-2, 2-1, one penalty from Kessié and the second was from Rebic, and we needed that win. We haven't won the last two games, and it felt like we were dropping a lot of points. We didn't win any of the two Europa League games we had, and we needed that big win against, you know, a respectable team, which is Roma, who's, you know, been doing quite well this season. So what's everyone's thought on it? Farin, you want to start since we're the guest?
Yeah, I just say it's about damn time that Milan firstly played the way they did, but secondly, getting the result, and it's a much needed result, particularly because most of the rivals dropped points this weekend. And it's just a very good response and a long-awaited response.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that it was back to like the Milan that we saw in the first half of the season. We were energetic. We were aggressive in defence. We were strong. We looked like we were more up for it. It seemed before like we were just sleepwalking through games. But today it seemed like we really wanted it. And I think we were unlucky not to win by more. We had some lucky moments and we were riding our luck when they had a few penalty shots and they had a few decent chances. But we've seen Tomori was ruled offside. Rebic and Ibra got a bit of a confusing, sweaty goal and messed that up. And could have been a lot more than 2-1. So, yeah, really happy overall. Big win, about time.
Just one of those games where we had so many chances on those FIFA games, or the Celtic-Barca game, where Celtic won by 2 goals and Barca had 1 goal, or they had all the chances, but then Celtic got away with the result. It seemed like one of those games, but, you know, thank God we closed it out the way we did. I thought, you know, first half it was all Milan. We should have had at least, you know, I think our viewers would agree with me, at least 7 or 8 goals. First half, so we're unlucky to have not finished those chances off, but you know, good result. These are the games you have to win, like Justin was saying. You know, it doesn't depend on the derby, it's the games that come after that you have to take each game and you progress.
Yeah, I thought it was probably the best we could have realistically hoped for, given the way that Milan have been playing over the last couple of weeks. Yeah, I thought it was honestly our best performance, probably maybe even since the Napoli game. Start of the season had a similar kind of vibe to it. I was slightly disappointed he didn't bring on Hauge, because like that would have made it great. Not sure Pioli got his substitutions completely correct this time, but I mean it did the job. I think Rebic was absolutely fantastic as well. He's a very strange player. He's either world class or world ass, should we say. I mean, today he was great. He scored an absolutely great goal, and he was fantastic in the first half. As Matt said, we should have scored way more goals as well. I'm really happy.
I mean, yeah, you mentioned how, I'm really happy with the win. Like, we did the job. That's at the end, that's what matters, the win. But I'm not really too happy with how Haug has been handled. Like, Rebic is the left winger who got injured. You have one left winger in the bench. That's Haug. And then Pioli brings on a central mid. I think Krunja central mid. I still don't know where he plays. But, you know, confidence-wise, that can be good for Haug. You know, he's already the fourth choice, pretty much, left winger. And he's been left out the Europa League squad. So, you know, I think everyone thought since he's been left out of the Europa League squad, he would get many more minutes in the league. And I think ever since that's happened, he's gotten like 10 minutes against Betsen. I think that was it. And yeah, I'm just don't understand what's going on with that scenario with Haug and Pioli.
Most of us thought that Haug would be the, you know, the easy sub to come on when Rebic is coming off. He's the designated left winger. Liao was already on the field, I believe. So, you know, how you have a left winger on the bench and he brings on Castileo. So I was a bit perplexed by that one as well.
Yeah. I mean, I understand, you know, you can say it's a bit of a more conservative approach. You know, you're winning 2-1. You take, you know, Rebic, who is definitely a much more offensive player than he is defensively. And you bring on Krunic, who I guess you could say is more of a well-rounded player who can defend. And I think towards the end of the game, he was basically playing as a third center back. Like, he was just in our own penalty area, which, you know, that's how in the end you win games. You know, you score goals and then you have to defend, which is understandable. But, you know, I'm just, because Hauge, we can all agree he's a good player. But, you know, if a young player doesn't get minutes, then that can help his confidence. Or, and obviously, if you don't have confidence, you're going to get worse. We've seen him so many times with so many players. So I'm just hoping Hauge gets some minutes, like against Udinese, who, you know, we all respect Udinese, is not as good of a team as Roma. So I think those are the type of games you have to experiment a little bit and throw in some players that wouldn't get minutes normally.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Napoli game as well. And there's the argument, like you say, to bring on someone like Krunic, who's a bit more defensively solid. But then Hauge in that Napoli game, he was perfect on the counter and he got that goal. So there's the argument, yeah, fair enough. You want the experienced head, Serie A, someone who's experienced in Serie A like Krunic. But then it's important to not forget that Hauge on the counter-attack, a big ground like the Olimpico or San Paolo, like Hauge can do a job and he's shown that. So there's... with Pioli, I don't know what's happened. I don't want to read into it too much or create some sort of fake drama or fake beef. But like, there's the excuse that Krunic is more well-rounded, and then there's the excuse that Krunic is more versatile or experienced. But like, those excuses aren't valid when there's evidence in the past that Hauge is okay for these roles. And yeah, it's just disappointing that someone who's like, there's been loads of bright spots this season, but it's a bit annoying to see this one just kind of fizzle away when we could really use it and we could really use him and like take advantage of a really good season. But yeah, it's just a shame that he's not getting this regular game time that we were hoping for. Also with substitutions, what do we think about Hakan getting taken off for Brahim Diaz? Because we were questioning Hakan against Inter and against Spezia. It's all this contract talk and all this. Is he settled? Is he like, no, he's got the contract in the bag, a bit like Aubameyang in a way. He knows he's got this big contract on his way and now he's just like half-arsed it, basically.
Mm-hmm. I think he got injured, but yeah, regardless, the point still stands.
All of us can add on the Hakan situation. We have strong thoughts on that performance. So he wants a new contract, but he's not playing for it. Like, if you want that contract, you have to show that you're the man to step up in these big occasions, but he's not doing that. As we saw, he got subbed off for Brahim Diaz. So I just think if Hakan, if he wants that, he has to earn it.
You know, for example, for Gijo, he's saving us every single game. Like, every single game, there's two big, three chances to get saved by Gijo. Whereas with Hakan, the last honestly, I can't remember the last time he has dropped a really good performance. So as Naeem said, if he doesn't prove himself that he's the man we can give 7 million to a year, then we can find so many better players out there for cheaper who can fit in that role just as well, if not better than he has in the past the years.
If you look at like the way Hakan has performed in totality, for his entire Milan career, he's only really been on top form for 6 to 8 months, I would say. And again, is that enough from someone who's been there for close to 4 years? Is it enough to warrant having such a big contract? You know, when you are entering Champions League, you need to up the caliber of the squad on a whole. You can't just have the likes of Krunic on the bench. You know, you need to have quality. And Hakan isn't playing like someone who's scared of his position. And it's been going on for the past few weeks. I don't know what's going to give. I think Brahim Diaz might need to start a game or two just to remind him that, like Romagnoli, he is sort of replaceable. Because he really, in my opinion, I don't think he's done enough to actually get the demands that he wanted, to get the 5 million a year. That's my take on it. His performances, and when he doesn't play well, usually Milan don't play well. Thankfully, today the team came together, and despite him dropping a really poor performance, they all performed at a very high level.
I mean, I also think, should we not renew his contract, just let him go for free would be a disaster economically. And just, you know, just from a viewer point of view, if you let him go, your number 10, who arguably was, you know, okay, and, you know, had very good performances, you know, I think we could get a good, maybe even 20 million, maybe exaggerate, but we can still get a fair amount of money. Should we be selling him? And I think if we just let him go for free, that just doesn't look good on us. And economically, it's not good either. Because if we renew and decide to sell him, that's obviously unfair. But at the same time, I don't think we're in a position to just let go players for free like that anyways.
Yeah, I agree with what Firmino said, to be fair, about he seems too comfortable. Like, I think that's the thing in this squad. I think people like Hakan, they've seen that Brahim Diaz is just been a bit meh. He's been a bit like just 6.5 out of 10, 7 out of 10. So Hakan's like, yeah, I can put that performance in. I can put in a 7 out of 6.5, 7 out of 10, and I'm going to keep my spot. And I think what's good, this Tomori sort of incident, this sort of Tomori story that's developing, where the club captain's been putting in subpar performances and is now being, well, today he got dropped today. And the fact that that's happening is, I think, a good sign. Like, we don't want this squad where it's a different starting 11 every game just because some people are having off days. But if every player knows that their squad place isn't safe and that they're not a guaranteed starting 11, and that if they do put in a run of 5 bad games that they can be dropped, then I think that's healthy. I think that's good competition. And I think, yeah, that's something with Hakan. I think he feels too safe and too secure in his position. And that's why maybe we're not seeing the Hakan of last season, where he was getting goals and assists every single game.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. That's the biggest gap we have between us and a UCL level team. If you look at Man City or Bayern Munich, or, like, you know, any of the top teams right now, they have so many good players on the bench. Like, if Guardiola wants to rest players, he can bring on Mahrez and Aguero and stuff like that, which is incredible if you think about it. But that's, I think that's what, you know, we need to work on this summer, bring more players that are good, not just good enough for the bench, but good enough to be in the team, so we have more competition between every spot. I think Wally was saying in the first, in the second episode for Theo Hernandez, if we bring someone like Firpo from Barcelona, who is a good left back, that was inevitably going to motivate both of them more. And then all of a sudden we have two left backs who are good. And if we can do it for every position, we can have, you know, good players, motivate the players, and, you know, just have a better team.
Yeah, and you also see that with Sandro Tonali, and in Benacer's absence, I think he's been really good. It could have been a lot more disastrous had someone like Tonali not been there. So it just reinforces the point that you need an adequate backup who can play at a very high level.
And Tonali has been excellent as well, just generally ever since he got that red card. I think it was against like Benevento. He was great again today, I thought. And also thought Brahim Diaz did quite well off the bench. Something special, but Hakan was completely invisible in the first half. Brahim was, I have to say, was probably a little bit better. I mean, he was maybe a bit thrown about the place because Pioli, I think, played him as like a false nine for a chunk of the game, and I thought that was really, that didn't really work. But once he sort of switched things around, put Leao up top, and he sort of put Krunic on the left, it all kind of evened up. And I think those are two players I think we should invest in more over the future. And you know, Brahim hasn't shown everything he could have, I thought, maybe this season, but I still think he's a promising player, and I think he's one to invest in. Maybe not if we can maybe extend the loan instead of buying him outright, that would be great. I definitely think he's quite underrated, and Tonali's been excellent. So yeah.
I want to touch on Tomori. I've been talking about him the past few episodes where I've been saying he should start over Romagnoli, and it's probably because I saw his goal on Wolves where he struck it from, I think, 40 yards out and he just lasered that top left. So ever since then, I thought, wow, this kid's good. So he started, I think it's his first league start today, and he caught up to Veretu on the counter. He's rapid. And then he had that double block you guys all saw with Tonali too. He was just fantastic defensively. He's the modern day center back. He's complete. He's fast. You may argue his positioning is not as good as Capitano's, but Tomori, that's gonna get better with time. He has Simon Kaya beside him, so he's gonna learn a lot from him. But overall, for me, he was the man of the match. He was so solid today. He was aerially, and then he made a couple of interceptions too, which were really, really good. He was aggressive too, I've noticed. He pushes so high up to almost the midfield. It was Mayoral. He was breathing on him up to the midfield line. And he did commit a foul, but he's so aggressive in the tackle. And then he has the pace to just drop back, even if he's high up there. So I thought it was a fantastic, complete performance. And Romagnoli should look at that and really evaluate, this is what I'm up against. You know, if I have to earn my spot back, because I have a really promising kid that's ahead of me in that starting XI. And this kid just dropped a 9 out of 10 performance, in my opinion.
Yeah, just love it. So what does this mean for the top four? So if you look at the current standings, we have Inter with 56, we have AC Milan with 52, Juventus is 46 points, but with a game in hand, and then we have Atalanta with 46 as well. So currently we have an 8-point gap between second and third, but obviously Juventus has a game in hand. So worst case scenario, you would have 3-point gap. Juventus will move up to 49 should they win with Napoli whenever they play it. So what does this mean? Obviously, this is good. We need this win, and this reinforces us being on the top four right now. And you know, I think it's a good win, as I said. And if we can keep the momentum, there's no reason why we shouldn't even finish second. I think we have the means to finish second. Like Juventus drew against Verona. Like clearly, they're not as good as they've been in the recent years. So I think this is a good thing. So what's your thoughts on top four and this game's impact on making it top four?
For me, I think, you know, it's cliche where you have to say you have to win every game in front of you, but it's come to a point in the season where Milan have to approach it game by game. I don't think it's wise to wonder about what Juventus are doing, what Roma are doing, and even what Inter are doing. It's just you have to approach each game with the same tenacity, same composure, same mentality as we've seen today versus Roma, and evaluate at the end of the season. Because if they play the way they played now in this game against Roma, I don't even see why they can't, you know, they might actually end up winning the Scudetto at the end of the season. We don't know that. Of course, every team will have their slumps. Every team will have their ups and downs. I don't think Inter are all faultless. We saw in the Inter game, also Milan could have gotten into the game. Had they scored, it might have been different. So it's still difficult to tell for me. I just think that the team should just approach it game by game and see where that gets them.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was a huge win, particularly just to show that we're still in it. We're still in the title race. It's only 4 points. That's only two games in which Inter need to drop points. And as Firmino said, they're far from perfect. They weren't so hot at the start of the season when, after they lost the derby and they're really struggling in the Champions League. Unfortunately, they don't have the distraction of being shit in Europe to distract them from the league. They'll definitely will experience a drop off in form at some point, and whether we're going to be around to capitalize on that is yet to be seen. And I hope we can.
This was a big result for us. It's just letting Inter know and Conte know that we're still here. We're still on your tails. We're not going away anytime soon. And look, we're putting the pressure on. So, and they know that any slip up from Conte's men, we'll be there to capitalize in a snap. So I think the Scudetto race might go down to the wire because Inter have some big games coming up down to Roma and Juve. I think we might make top four. I mean, surely it's a guaranteed at this point. We pulled up some big results. So it's going, we have to take it game by game, as I said earlier. But I think we will make top four. But it's just letting Inter know that, we're not going away. We're here.
Yeah, we've got, if Juve beat Napoli, then it's 8 points between us and fifth. So an 8-point cushion. And even if Napoli win, it's still 6 points. So it's two games. So we're in a kind of good position where we're two games away from top if Inter slip up twice. But then we're 2 points away from dropping out of two games away from dropping out of the top four. So it's kind of it's a position where we're not comfortable, if that makes sense. So if I think with Milan, it's almost dangerous if we're 10 points, because that's when we'll start slacking. That's when we'll start resting. And that's when we'll do a proper bottle job. But I think having that pressure from below us, but at the same time, having a decent cushion, and then also having a make-upable, we can make that distance up at the top. I think that's good as well. And Inter fans will tell you. Inter fans don't need a Milanista to tell you. They know that they're probably the ones bricking it, thinking that they're going to slip up. Inter aren't going to go undefeated for the rest of the season. They're not going to win the last 13 games, whatever it is. They'll drop some points. They'll draw. They'll lose. There'll be shocks. There's so much time left to go. It's going to be unpredictable. So I think Samir said it before. As long as we just, and Firmino touched on it then, if we do our bit, then we'll get top four, obviously, because we're in that position now. And then the dream of the Scudetto might be realised if Inter slip up, yeah. Samir, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, like I said before, if we keep on winning with smaller teams, still possible. As for Inter, if Lukaku is injured, I think they're kind of done. We're used to playing without Zlatan, Hakan, half of the team we're missing. For the last 2 months. So we're kind of used to playing without the main starters. As for Inter, I think if Lukaku is injured, they will be slipping away. And I think with this match, we have a hatred with Roma. If we have our hatred with Napoli, Napoli, and against, what it calls, if we can win our Juve match, I think we can, with our full team, I think we can get top four.
Yeah, definitely. We put ourselves in a really healthy position with the good start we had, which means that we've afforded a little slip. We've had the derby loss. We had the we had the derby loss, and we also had the Spezia loss. We're in a position where we can drop a few points and still be safe. And it's not like if we drop 1 point right at the top four, and if we win one game, we're going to win the league. There's so much time left. So yeah. And from the league table to our predictions table that we started the other week. So last week we all got none because we all predicted a Milan win, and we got battered 3-0 by Inter. But this week, finally, we've got some points on the board. So I said 2-2, so I got no points. Naeem said 1-1, and he got no points, obviously. Rid and Samir, however, get 3 points because they both predicted a 2-1 Milan win. So those two are going to be joint top. And then Joe gets 1 point for just getting the right score. It's also important to mention that Firmino, our guest today, got predicted 2-1 Milan win as well. So we're going to have us five, and then the guests are going to be on the leaderboard as well. So, yeah, we've got three people joint top, Joe kind of mid-table, and me and Naeem in a relegation battle. So
Joe in a Gianpaolo position, you could say.
Gianpaolo-esque. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to track throughout the season. I think that league table is going to be just about as unpredictable as the Serie A league table as well. So, yeah, good start for Samir and Rid.
Okay, so now we're going to be talking about some questions that have been sent in from our watchers and people on Twitter. So first is actually from my brother, Ben, who's not a Milan fan, but has an interest in football. And he asks if we beat Man United, who many consider favourites for the Europa League, does that give us enough confidence to go on and win the whole thing? Or do we think that we'll slip up? Or do we think that a big win against the team that many consider favourites to win it, does that give us enough confidence to go on and win the whole thing? What is everyone's thoughts on that?
I think we're the two favourites is what we'll match up against. So a lot of people think that Man United are their favourites, and then we're the other favourites to win it. But potentially, like, both teams could have gone on to the final and we could have played each other in the final, but we're having this game early. So I think whoever does win this game will actually go on to win the final, because I think we're the top two teams in this competition right now. And no disrespect to other teams like Spurs, Rangers. I'm sure Joe will disagree on that one. But I think whoever wins this side will go on to win the trophy.
I think even if we don't win, it is definitely, if we don't end up winning the trophy, I think we definitely need a win against Man U. It kind of relates to a question asked by Rotti Return later, where he says, how should we approach the Man U game? Should we put more focus on that game or the league? And I think regardless of where we put the approach, I think we haven't had a big win against a big European team in ages. Like I can't honestly tell you the last time I think we won against a good team, which wasn't in a friendly. And I think if we do win Man U against Man U, that's, you know, confidence boost for players, like, okay, we are ready for the UCL, because Man U is going to be, you know, I guess the standard by why each UCL team is going to play by. And if we're able to beat them, it's a good preparation for next year. Should we make it to the UCL? And, you know, for us fans as well, like, you know, again, as I said, we don't know when the last time we won against a big European team. So I think it's something that us fans haven't experienced. I don't think Matt has ever experienced it, because he became a fan like 2016, something like that. So that'll be the first time for him as well. So I think, and, you know, it's just a statement, you know, like we won against Man U, who's probably, he is second in the Prem, the best league in the world, quote unquote. So it would be a statement for us to be like, okay, we are coming back, win against Man U, and then go through.
I agree with you. Sorry, you want to go first, Samir?
No, you go first, fine.
Okay. I agree with everything Red says as well. It's for the fans, this would be the perfect test to see what Milan look like against a proper European team. But that being said, I still think the Scudetto, or rather top four, is still the priority. So even if Milan do manage to win against Manchester United, I think the better path to Champions League football would be securing top four in the league. And again, I think I'll draw this conclusion from Pioli's selection in Europa League. I don't think he's ever put together a full squad. I think maybe the second leg against Red Star was the closest we've gotten to having a full Milan starting 11. So again, I think it's definitely possible, like Naeem said, that Manchester United and Milan were both favourites for the Europa League. And it can happen, but I still think the priority is domestic football, and Milan should focus on that.
Sami, I think you were going to say something.
Like you have mentioned, I think the last time we faced a big team was 2013-14 against Atletico Madrid, if I'm not wrong, when Kaká scored away goal. Anyways, I think we're not going to really focus on Europa. Like, we are always playing our B teams. That might change because we got a big team I think if we beat Man United, we can go all the way, provided we start up our main players. If we have to get top four, get UCL, or like get out of top four and win the win Europa and get the UCL, I would prefer winning the Europa and getting the UCL, you know? You get a trophy and get a UCL. But then I think from our management perspective, I think we'll probably like aim for winning the league. And then I think Europa is not as important to them as the league is, like Farino said. But I think if we can beat Man United, hopefully we do, and probably we can hold the whole damn thing.
Yeah, I think Ganja, I'll add after
you. Sorry. I think if we do beat Man United, I think it would then be, I think then we would have to consider ourselves in a position where we should be trying to win the competition, because, you know, why would you like beat, you know, probably the biggest, like, at least in terms of the profile club in the Europa League, and then go out to, like, I don't know, young boys in the quarterfinals. It would be a bit disappointing. So, yeah, I mean, I think we'll see a full squad against Man United, and I think if we would win, it would be our first big European win since Barcelona in, like, 2013, and even then in the second leg. I won't talk about that. I don't think anyone wants to talk about the second leg against Barcelona in 2013. So, yeah, but hopefully it's slightly better story than that. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think looking in the stand at the you know, Serie A, we are second. Our aim is top four. We have a reasonable cushion from where we are to second, fourth place. And, you know, I think, why not just go for it and try to, you know, win against Manya? You know, I think we can afford to rest some of the key players in the league. For example, like, you know, rest Ibra, rest someone like Theo. Like, I think we can afford to do that. And look in the next games against Udinese and stuff like that. We, you know, ideally we'd be winning them much more comfortably than we won against Roma, because they, with all due respect, and I don't think they're as good as a team, and we should be winning them comfortably if we want to make, if we want to win the league or even make top four, we should be in those teams comfortably. And I think looking at the table, I think we should give a good chance. Like, I would be disappointed if I comes 11th of March and we play Man United and then Pioli's, you know, see Krunic and the likes of him starting against Man U.
Just to play devil's advocate here, so if Milan do sort of prioritize winning the Europa League, and Lazio, Atalanta, Inter, and possibly Juventus are without European football, how does that play in the long run, where Milan are playing Europa League knockout rounds against top opposition? You're talking Ajax, you know, Spurs. It's going to be difficult whilst your closest rivals, I think Roma might, you know, might actually progress, but how does that play out? Then do you think the squad has the depth to compete on both fronts?
I mean, short answer, do we have the depth to compete in both fronts? I don't think we do. As depressing as it might sound, I think Juventus, Inter, they both have better teams than us. They have more depth. So obviously, Inter doesn't have European concerns anymore, and we can clearly see it, because ever since they got knocked out of the UCL, they've been playing much better in the league. And you can see, you know, they only play once a week, and they can start the, you know, starting 11 every single week without worrying about who needs to rest, because they haven't played in a week. But yeah, I mean, I would love to say we'll be able to do very well in both fronts, but it looks unlikely. And as I think, you know, by what I said, I think it feels like I would like to prioritize the ECL, Europa League, which I don't think we should. But, you know, if let's say we do really well in the first leg against Man United, you know, I'll, you know, probably give a second four if it was Pioli and the management.
Just quickly, are we home or away in the first leg?
Away. Away. Old Trafford, yeah.
Yes, I think if we go there and, like, I think we should play our strongest team in the first leg. Because then, like, say we get two away goals at Old Trafford, then that means that we're in a like strong position, and then we'll know like, oh, can we maybe play, I don't know, Krunic instead of Rebic, or can we play Mandzukic instead of Ibrahimovic? I think the worst thing to do would be like play a B team in the first leg, and then like we've like kind of threw the tie away before it's even started. And to go back to Firmino's question, I think it sounds silly, but when I play Football Manager, what I do is if when I'm playing in the Europa League or Champions League, and I know Pioli doesn't need my Football Manager tactics, but if I'm playing against, like, say I've got Man U, and then at the weekend I've got Crotone, for example, then I'll play the big team, I'll play our like strongest team in the Europa League and rest of the weekend. But obviously, if we've got Man U midweek and Inter at the weekend, for example, or Juve at the weekend, then you might rest midweek. So I think it all depends on the games we've got around. If we've got a tough away game following the Man U game, then that's going to be like, but yeah, if we can, like, if we, it depends on the fixtures that surround the Man U game. I've not actually checked it, but if we've got a tough game at the weekend, then maybe rest in the Europa League. But if we've got an easy home game, like on a Sunday after Europa League game, then I think just go all out in Europa League and then trust our backups against Crotone, for example, rather than Man U. That's how I'd look at it.
Just, it's a bit off topic, but I think Tomori should be defending against Rashford because, you know, he's played against them in England in the camps and in the Premier League. He knows Rashford's quick. Tomori is just as quick. So, you know, when I saw that picture, I thought, oh no, Rashford's going to torture Mignoli. It's going to be bad. So I think for both legs, I think it should be Tomori that's playing in those games from the get-go, because he knows these English players in and out. He knows their moves, what they do, their strong foot, all that, you know, nifty stuff. So I think he should be playing from the start.
Yeah.
Should we move on to the next question, which is from, I'm probably going to butcher his name, so I apologize. Kaushnik, I think.
Kaushnik, yeah.
I apologize if I butchered the name. So he talks about the Pioli leaving debate. So what's everyone's thoughts? And I think last podcast with Justin, we covered that none of us think a get rid of Pioli now, mid-season, is a good idea. Because I think we all agree it would be disastrous just to, you know, because we are overachieving right now, and just because we, you know, have lost a couple of games and no longer first, so I don't think it's a good enough reason to say Pioli go. But should, you know, come summer, and then let's say we make a top four, I think a lot of us agreed that we wanted, if we can get upgrade on Pioli, meaning Allegri or someone like that, then we should go for it. But besides that, if we can't really get an upgrade, then I think we should stick to Pioli. And I think we kind of covered that quite well in the last episode, but I just wanted to get Farinha's thoughts on that.
I think he's still on course for staying with Milan. I think it's highly dependent on Champions League football. If he doesn't get Milan into the Champions League after this good a run and so deep into the season, then I think they might look elsewhere. But he's done nothing wrong, you know, and he's worked with limited resources. He's really got this group playing fantastic football after the last few years. And I don't think it will be a good decision to get rid of him now, or if he gets into the Champions League. I don't think we should go chasing another manager.
So do you think Pioli would be the ideal manager to have for the UCL next season?
Ideal, if you want to be competing for, it depends on the expectations and the objectives. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say he's the ideal manager, but it would be senseless to chop and change. You know, he's built something here, and you allow him the chance to actually go into Europe, get the guys used to playing Champions League football before Milan start dreaming of perhaps winning the thing. So I think just give him the benefit of the doubt, see how it turns out, and approach it later on, across that bridge when you get there.
Yeah, I think the main argument as to why people say we should not keep him is the fact, you know, he doesn't have you know, UCL experience, he's never won anything. But at the same time, you know, I think every good manager at some point never had UCL experience, never won anything. Mm-hmm. And obviously Pioli has been, you know, around for a while. I'm saying he's a newcoming manager, you know, give him a chance. But as I think I can understand why, you know, Farin is saying that, you know, he has definitely built something. So maybe, you know, kind of off halfway when he's doing clearly this will be good, might be.
He showed that he has the balls to bench Romagnoli, to bench your captain. So I think that's a positive sign going forward. That you know, no one, you know, he's open to benching some of our mainstays. You know, some of the pillars in our team. So maybe that's a good sign going into Champions League. That you know, you have to be looking over your shoulder. So today was a really really crucial day for Pioli's managerial career, because I think most of us thought, Friday, Thursday, that Romagnoli would be starting with Kjaer again. But when the lineup came out, that was not the case, and he did good there.
Guys, even I believe the Pioli talk is crazy right now. We are second, only 4 points behind. I don't know why everyone talking about sacking him. If we get out of top four, he should be 100% gone. If we stay on top four, like which was our objective starting of the season, he should stay, definitely. And he made us play a beautiful game. Like last year, we played so good. Like everyone improved with him. So I think we should give him benefit of the doubt. And I think he can do something. Also, it's not his fault. When someone gets injured, he has to play Mitie. If someone is injured, if Ibra is out, he has to play Liao, who always is lazy when it comes off the bench. Like if Saleh is injured, he has to play with Castillejo. It's not his fault, you know. The players he has in his disposal is not the best. With the squad he has, he's overachieving, in my opinion. Like second, like with this team, like 4 points behind Inter, that's crazy to me, honestly. And if you get tougher, I don't know why is everyone complaining. Most probably he's not the right coach for maybe winning the UCL, but that's not our target. Our target is getting the UCL, staying on it for a few years, and then, you know, then you go for the big guns. Till then, he is perfect. So, yeah, I think he should stay. Till now, we have 14 games to play. Something good might happen, something bad might happen, but for now, he is the perfect choice for us.
Yeah, I think Samir summed up quite well there. We got a question for Joe from Justin, who was our guest the last podcast. So he would like a full thesis as to why Joe would prefer his team playing Nats football, you know, tiki taka and all that, instead of shit housing a way into winning a trophy.
Well, I mean, this has been a recurring debate between me and Justin for some time. Yeah, I mean, as for my thesis, I don't have it with me now.
Working on it.
Yeah, working on it. Since I've got the first draft, Justin DiPaolo will be the first man, the first man to see it. But yeah, I guess. However, I think my point really about this really is that I don't think it's possible to win everything or win trophies if you're not playing some sort of good football, at least anymore. I mean, you've seen the likes of Mourinho and even like,
Simeone.
Yeah, Simeone
as well.
Yeah. Sorry, very tired. I've forgotten how to speak words. But if you look at like Mourinho, he used to win everything. But now in the modern game, he's not able to do that anymore. I think that's partially because his football is limited and partially because he's at Tottenham and they're not going to win anything. No offense to Spurs.
It's in the history of the Tottenham, as Killian once said.
I can have Tottenham fans at my door with pitchforks and torches.
There isn't many Tottenham fans in my opinion.
Maybe where I am, there might be more, but you know.
Yeah.
But guys, but Allegri did win playing defensive, didn't he? He most of his one in his last years was 1-0, 2-1, like somehow winning it. And he went to UCL twice in 3 years. So I think if you know how to play defensive, you can do it. it's just a player in your disposal, you know.
I hate that. I honestly hate defensive wins. If you go, like, honest, I'll be happy with the win. Like, honestly, you know, if AC Milan was to win the Scudetto, but from now on, all we do is score penalties and then park the bus, I'll be happy. I'll be the first one whining to everyone and be like, hi, that was you. But at the same time, inside of me, I'm like, I don't like seeing my team being dominated for 90 minutes, not getting the ball and parking the bus. But, you know, if it's effective, then I'm okay with it. But, you know, in my ideal world, we'll play, you know, tiki-taka, whatever you want to call it, like champagne football, Gianpaolo.
Yes. Yeah, nice take there. but, yeah, I think for Allegri, he was always considered, like, I think at the time when he was at
UV, oh, there he goes.
I don't think he was fully appreciated, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no.
Vince fans, and now they've got Pirlo, he's clowning around. I think it's a different story.
Gianpaolo's unemployed now, isn't he? Just got sacked from the Torino job.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not his agent, so it's not my problem.
Guys, to be honest, I would prefer a manager like Allegri than Sarri. You know, Sarri played beautiful football like, what, 4 or 5 years? That got him nowhere but sacked and sacked and sacked.
I mean, he did win a Europa League.
Okay,
Allegri did get sacked as well, to be fair. I'm not
going to say that. To be fair, I disagree with Allegri when he got sacked with Juventus, because I think he was, you know, he was doing quite well. And then they were like, you know what, we're tired of you for no real reason. Then they made this like big media, like history or something, really. Like he had made history, which I thought was weird. But yeah, that's for Juventus fan to judge. I mean, they have Pirlo now, so. And a lot of them are regretting getting rid of Sarri and Allegri, which says a lot. But yeah, moving on to the next one. Question from Wally, our second guest. So shout out to Wally as well. This is a question for Farinho. Bit like Joe's question. If you would play with, if you would play FIFA in me, how much would you lose and how? Basically, he's saying you get destroyed at FIFA if you were to play against him, Farinho. What's your reaction to that?
Oh, there's only one way to settle it. Name the time and the place.
Whoa!
We'll sponsor it. We get the sponsorship. We'll set up live stream for it.
That would be sick. That would be sick.
Yeah.
I might just break my remote halfway through, so.
Content, that will make a good clip. All right. I think that was all the questions we had.
Oh no, we had one more.
Where
someone asked, I don't know who it was, but it was Zlatan's. If Zlatan leaves, who would we have as his replacement? So I'm going to start off with Andrea Belotti, and the reason I'm going to choose him is because he's been longing to play for a top club for so many years. I think he's a good striker. He most definitely wants to play Champions League. So I think Milan could be the perfect destination for him to shine. Because I don't think he wants to stay at Torino fighting relegation his entire career. He's a great player. And, you know, I think we should go for him.
I agree. I think a lot of Milan fans will like Belotti because, you know, he knows the league. I think he's a Milan fan. I'm not completely sure, but I think he might be. And he's obviously a good player. And I think he would do good things. I think he's ideal for us. And he's Italian. So, you know, from a management perspective, that's something you want to look into as well. But one player I would love to have, which I think looks very unlikely, is Jovic. I think that's how I say it. The Real Madrid player on loan at back of Frankfurt right now. You know, has had a terrible spell at Real Madrid, injuries and everything. But he used to play with Rebic and they both were really good together. And I think he's still very good. So I think, you know, realistically, Belotti, the dream would be Jovic or Haaland. You know, I don't have to explain why I would like Haaland in the team.
I'd quite like Alexander Isak from Real Sociedad, I think. I just really like him. I think that he's had that sort of experience of not making it. And he's come back and I saw he scored a hat-trick the other day. He's similar. He's quite tall. So obviously, I think we've spoken about this before. There's no... Like Zlatan is a one-of-a-kind player. You're not going to find like a 6'5". unit like him, like for a long time. He's a once every like 50 years player, but I think Isak is as close as we're going to get. He's quite strong, he's quite physical. He's got what Ibra doesn't have as much, understandably, because he's 39, but he's really quick as well. And yeah, I just feel as though, yeah, Alexander Isak, I'm not sure how much it'd cost. And it depends on if Real Sociedad get in the Champions League as well, because he might not want to leave. But yeah, I think that if we can get Alexander Isak, I think that might be a nice option that might not be as expensive as a Haaland, for example.
He's Italian. He's been in the league for like for half a decade, so he'll be a good fit, honestly. Yeah.
I think the dream signing for me would be Haaland, but it's obviously very unrealistic. I'm sure it's financially possible, but also at the same time, it's probably not advisable. Besides from that, I guess I really like to see odds on Edouard from Celtic. He's a great player. He's had a bit of a shit season this year, but I think that's partially, there's lots of things going on at Celtic that have contributed to that. But I think he'd be a great fit in Serie A, so him maybe. And I like Belotti as well. So, honestly, if Zlatan is still playing at the level he is right now, I don't see why we shouldn't renew him.
Aaron, are you going to say a Steven Pienaar out of retirement for our new striker?
not a chance. And I could start up front. I mean, I'm just teasing. Realistically, though, I think Belotti would be the best possible option. I'd even like to see Immobile. You know, it might be a good idea. The Isak transfer, I think that might be far too much. Milan might look to bringing a right winger. No, I think they prioritize that. But yeah, the realistic and I think the easiest option here is Belotti.
So, like we do with every guest, we have Farinha, who's from South Africa, which geographically is far from where we are, far from everywhere our previous guests have been, very down south in the world. So I just wanted to ask, first of all, how did you become a Milan fan and your top three players ever? And then if you could go into, you know, how football is viewed in South Africa and just, you know, experience of South Africa and the 2010 World Cup as well. You know, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, well, I only started watching football in 2006. At that stage, I just saw Ronaldinho and my mind was blown. But I really fell in love with football when I started watching the 2006-2007 Milan Champions League campaign. And at that stage, my favorite player was Kaká. So ever since then, I've been a Milan fan, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. So there's that. And then I think my top three Milan players, is it like top three greatest, top three favorite?
Oh, your favorites, your top three favorites. Be anyone, yeah.
My favorite, I think, would be Shevchenko, El Shaarawy, and Kaká. Yeah. I just really wanted El Shaarawy to succeed. And of course, Kaká is Kaká at the end of the day. What was the third question? What's football like in
football
South
like
Africa?
In South Africa, because, you know, I think a lot of people, if you think of football, they associate it immediately with Europe and don't think it's as popular as everywhere else. And, you know, the 2010 World Cup experience, if you had the experience, and, you know, how was it and stuff?
Yeah, just to put a disclaimer, my dad sold my World Cup tickets because I messed up in school. So that was my punishment.
I understand if it's a touchy topic, we don't have to go over it.
No, I 100% deserved it. So like, I'm not pressed about it at all. But yeah, I think football or soccer in South Africa is the most popular sport. But in terms of what we view, a lot of it is the English Premier League. I think it's been that way since like the 70s. English football has been a very big part of South African football culture. So like a lot of my friends will support Man United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, like that. So it's very rare to find Milan supported down here. But yeah, it's the level of football isn't too high. I don't know if you see on Twitter those videos where the guys like to fuck around on the ball and dribble, and you know, that's what South Africa is known for. So I think the talent is there from like a grassroots and development point of view, but a lot of players will go to European academies. So Ajax, Borussia Dortmund, I know there's a guy playing for, I think, Rangers. There's one who plays for Leicester, so it's quite cool.
Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah, I mean, okay, well, we have one more topic we want to discuss before we wrap it up.
I want to ask Bruno a question before we go.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Shabalala, oh, however you say his name, scored that goal. Where were you and how did you react?
Sipiwe Shabalala. Yeah, so everyone was pumped for that, right? Like, you have to understand, you come home after school, you're sitting and you're waiting for the game to kick off. And the whole day before that, you're hearing the vuvuzelas. People are walking around with their hats, the makarapas, you know. And when he scored that goal, there were hooters screaming, cheering. It was pure noise. And I think regardless of where you were in South Africa that day, you would have heard the cheering. It was a big moment for the country. And I think given its past, from a political point of view, it was an even bigger moment that, you know, Bafana are there on the big stage and have just gone ahead in the opening game of a World Cup. So yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. I was also screaming and running on the street. So yeah.
Understandably so.
Brilliant.
Do we have any more questions for Inyo? Is that all we have? I'll take this now. So we have one more topic we want to discuss. Have your topic then everything we've discussed so far. So a bit of backstory, which was nicely provided by Matt. So this is obviously about the LeBron James, Ibrahimovic back and forth about political involvement and everything like that. So Matt, do you just want to give us the backstories a little bit?
China have like relations in the NBA. So there was a Chinese player called Yao Ming who got drafted by the Houston Rockets, and he's like regarded as, he's been an all-star before, so he's been a good basketballer. So China, like basketball is somewhat popular in China for that reason. And then there was a Hong Kong protest for like independence and democracy in China. And the Philadelphia 76ers general manager, which is like director of football, I think, like the equivalent, he said that he supports the democracy of like what Hong Kong are protesting for. And obviously China, being a fairly like totalitarian state, they were against that, and they went to extreme lengths basically and said that like they're cutting ties with Houston Rockets and the whole Yao Ming sponsorship sort of thing, and they said like we're not being anything involved with the NBA. And then there's like sort of like a savior sort of thing. The NBA were like, okay, LeBron, you're our most famous player, like you're like regarded as like top two players of all time, we need you to come out basically and backtrack and like dig yourself out of the hole, dig the NBA, the whole of the league out of the hole. And he was basically saying he just kind of in a way stuck up for China, which is like regarded as a bit of a bold decision considering like what that state stands for in some ways. And I think there's been a bit of confusion that people are saying that LeBron, that Ibra was angry or disappointed at LeBron for getting involved in Black Lives Matter, and I don't think that's true. I think the event he's referencing is this whole Chinese genocide stuff in the Hong Kong like dictatorship and all that. So I think it wasn't anything to do with Black Lives Matter. I think what Ibra was saying to LeBron, don't get involved in politics halfway around the world that you don't know anything about. That's where the debates kind of come from. And Rid, if you want to explain like what's kind of been said in interviews and on Twitter and since then regarding that.
So from what I can remember, Ibra released, as Matt said, an interview where he was pretty much saying you know, if an athlete just, you know, stick to doing the athlete because that's what you get at, and, you know, there's no reason, yeah, you don't have to go into politics just because you have that sort of status. And then LeBron obviously raised in an interview and he was saying stuff like, you know, he's doing it for his people, you know, he thinks there's a need for people who have status to, you know, especially if they come from like a challenging background, to like be sort of a, you know, figure people with those background can look at and be like, you know, this is a figure I want to be like, and, you know, help. And obviously if you have been, is, I think his main point was, if you have a platform, then, you know, why not use it for something good, and, you know, letting people know what's right, what's wrong, where you stand with things. I think he kind of, you know, I think he mainly tries to avoid the China drama that was going on, because obviously I guess that doesn't look too good, because he pretty much came out and kind of said, you know, support China. I'm not saying he said he supported the genocide, everything, but from a media perspective, you know, I would have expected him to be like, listen guys, this isn't cool, you know, because, you know, he's LeBron James, like the NBA is not gonna let him go just because they disagree with him. It's like saying, you know, boss Cristiano Ronaldo is gonna get kicked out from Juventus just because he said something, you know, Nedved, someone doesn't agree with. I mean, he has the status to make a statement, and if he makes the statement, you know, everyone else in the NBA has to pretty much follow it, be okay with it, because you can't kick someone like LeBron James out of your franchise or, you know, the sport, because, you know, income, economic, all those reasons. Like, and, you know, I believe, you know, LeBron hasn't taken the right stand there, but at the same time, I do agree with what he said, you know, if you have a status, you have the power to, you know, make a good impact on society, let people know where you stand in social issues and stuff like that, which I think is important. And I think, you know, the way Ibrahim just said it, it seemed like he was just kind of telling him off from being like, you know, you're a basketball player, that's all you can do, don't branch into anything else. Whilst I agree with what LeBron James said about, you know, if you have the status, you can do something good about it, I disagree with his, you know, other stuff that have been going on with the NBA China situation. But yeah, what's everyone thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, in terms of the basketball stuff, you know, I honestly don't follow professional basketball whatsoever, so I don't think I can have an informed opinion about it. But I do think it's very typical of the media generally these days that it's been trying to frame Zlatan for, you know, shaming LeBron James for getting involved in Black Lives Matter, when really, you know, like what Matt's saying, it was probably more about this thing with China, and that's a completely different story. But yeah, I mean, generally, I think athletes, obviously they have a lot of influence, and, you know, their opinions can be very impressionable to people. Yeah, I know if I was very young, you know, I mean, when I was young and following Milan, Zlatan was playing for Milan in his first spell, and he was one of my favourite players. But then if he came out and said something, I would probably instinctively think, oh, if Ibrahimovic is saying this, then it must be legit. But yes, you know, so it is debatable whether athletes should use their influence to, you know, get their views across to impressionable people. But at the same time, you know, they are humans like us. You know, they've got every right to express their views on whatever they want to. You know, because we do live in a world where mostly, most countries in the world, we have the privilege of freedom of speech. So yeah, it's very controversial, of course. But I think given the context and knowing that it was, you know, it was slightly different to the way that, you know, these big media companies have been trying to frame him out. You know, particularly, I think it was ESPN that, you know, been trying to make him look like a white supremacist for a while. You know, particularly after the whole Lukaku thing. I thought that was even more ridiculous, because it was quite clear that, you know, he was talking about something that they knew they had it was because they'd worked together at Manchester United, and they had like a sort of running, not like a running joke, but like a...
Yeah, there's context sort of to it, yeah.
Yeah, there's more context to it than Zlatan, you know, being a member of the KKK, and which he clearly isn't. I think he's worked with, you know, so many, he'd been in so many countries, and Zlatan as well as an ethnic minority. growing up in Sweden, it'd be hard for me to see him as a racist. So, yeah, I don't know if anyone else wants to elaborate on that.
I think that, from my understanding, Zlatan was talking about this issue from a neutral point of view. He's talking about both sides, where you can't use your platform to say these things. So, you know, it's like if Tom Brady said, go vote for Trump, you know, vice versa. No matter what your political opinion is, I think Zlatan was saying, no matter where you stand, you just can't use your platform to, you know, endorse votes or something like that. So, I mean, I do see his points, but then again, he's always said his mind. We've known this over the years. It's nothing new. He called out Pep Guardiola before. He's always spoken his mind, and, you know, he's always true to himself, which is what I like about him. He's not mincing his words. If he says something, he'll do it. You know, when he said, we're going to go challenge for the Scudetto, I didn't doubt him. And look where we are, so... you know, personally, I don't have I'm not going to take a stance on these issues, but that's just from Zlatan's perspective, that he's taking a neutral ground in these issues, that you can't really go around endorsing the hard left or the hard right.
I think for me, in principle, Zlatan was wrong. And in principle, LeBron was right. Not to support what LeBron is saying, but I do think when you are an athlete with a massive platform, you can affect positive change by raising your voice and raising awareness on issues that matter. And like Joe said, at the end of the day, they have that right to voice their opinions. Some people might think it's stupid. Obviously, if you're calling for things like violence, it's a completely different story. But Zlatan needs to realize that these people have power. These people have power. And if you are casting issues that plague communities and societies, and you are trying to challenge that and trying to almost create a dialogue about it, that is a good thing. And I think more people should do that. So instead of calling athlete A out for only addressing this particular subject, why aren't more people talking about things that are central to their struggle and things that matter? That's the way I see it.
And I mean, go on, Samir, go on.
I think it's blown out of proportion. I think Zlatan meant it like more for the China stuff rather than BLM. And I think media outlets have problem with him since he started playing football. And I think the US-based outlets hates him, you know, since his LA time. He kept on saying he's bigger than LA, he's bigger than US. I think they have a kind of hatred against him. Like the Lukaku voodoo shit, like, it didn't really, you know, everything he does, you know, they make it and they like they say it in a way, so it makes him look like racist. I don't think he's just talking about the BLM matters. I think he was kind of like shading on the China stuff LeBron did. See, I get LeBron's point, you know, if you have a platform, you should say what's right, what's wrong, you know, you have the power. I also get Zlatan's point. Like, you... people are like someone famous has power to pursue people, you know, like pursue kids, because celebrities have lots of power, you know, they have the persuasive power. So I get Zlatan, but then LeBron kind of did. If the interview did ask LeBron about the China thing, he would get stuck. I feel like he's being a hypocrite, you know. He's fighting for BLM, and on the other side he's supporting China when they're literally committing genocide against millions of Muslims. So I think he's being a hypocrite here. Like, you can't fight one way, the other way, you know, just turn your back. I think he's just grabbing the cash and running away, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end, I think it comes down to, I think Michael Jordan back in the days, he released this quote, I do commend Muhammad Ali for standing up for what I believed in, but I never thought myself as an activist. I thought myself a basketball player, which I think in the end just comes up to the personal choice of the athlete. You know, if you want to, you know, do something good for society, if you feel like that's what you're interested in and you feel like you can have an impact, then, you know, go for it. But at the same time, there is no one that says you must, you know, you have, so, you know, it's good if you do it. I think I personally think, you know, if you have status and you can impact society in a positive way, then I think you should go for it. But at the same time, no one can force you. Like, if you just want to be a basketball player or a football player, that's, you know, fair enough, then go for it. I think in the end, it just comes out to the personal choice. And, you know, I don't think, you know, I love Zlatan, like I have his shot on right now, but at the same time, I don't think, you know, just let people be at the end. Like, I get it, you know, you have your personal opinion, but I wouldn't personally attack, you know, I wouldn't, you know, if he said, you know, I don't take part in politics because that's not my thing, then fair enough. But, you know, I don't support, you know, going straight to people, be like, oh, LeBron James, I don't like what you're doing. I mean, I think at the same time, I think the question that was asked to him was directly specified to LeBron James. So I guess it wasn't completely his fault. But at the same time, I don't support calling out people just because you don't necessarily agree with what they're doing in the point of view, especially if, you know, if it has good impact, you know. So, yeah, I think, you know, at the end, it's just what every athlete wants to do and just let them do it. But obviously, you have freedom of speech, and as Zlatan said, he can give his opinion, as Naeem said. He's always been very vocal about it, and you can agree or disagree with it, but, yeah.
I mean, I was just going to say, at the end of the day, I think freedom of speech probably trumps everything. But I mean, I don't know if you guys saw, I was famous a couple of weeks back, there was sort of a similar thing where, you know, somebody that was, you know, quite famous, it was the actress Gina Carano from the Star Wars show, The Mandalorian, who got a lot of criticism for her views expressed. Yeah. And I think it was comparing what Republicans have gone through at the moment to like the Holocaust, which is obviously extremely, extremely controversial. And it's not something I really don't agree with that. But at the same time, she has the right to express that. And in the same way, LeBron James has the right to express what he wants. So, it's, you know, it's not always the best look, but, you know, it's the athlete's point. It's, you know, it's the, you know, people have the right to, sure, should have the right to say whatever they want, because, you know, you know, we ideally live in this world where we can do that, and you're gonna have to accept that not everyone's going to agree with us. Samir, I think you were going to say something.
I wish Zlatan, you know, like, questioned his statement better. Like, you know, ask Ibra, like LeBron directly about the China stuff rather than, you know, like, you know, saying, don't say political stuff. He should have directly said, why are you helping China? You know, like, go for it, you know? Like, what do you got to lose? Like, for me, LeBron is being hypocrite, honestly, you know? Like, he's being two-faced for me, honestly. I just pick as him as a player. He's probably the greatest basketball player of all time, honestly. But then, like, in one side, you're helping, and the other side, you're, like, ignoring, because, you know, money talks. So, yeah.
So, guys, just to wrap it up, Farinho...
Yeah, that was a heavy topic to conclude the podcast on, but
sorry,
yeah.
Sorry about that. Well, you know...
That was partially my fault as well.
It's all right. I'm sure it was interesting. Go on, Naeem.
Farinho has his own channel. It's called Farinho Talk. You can find it on Twitter. You can find it on YouTube. It's you can also find it on podcast, right, I believe, Farhan? Right.
Yeah. So Farinho Talks Milan.
Yeah, we'll leave all of Farinho's stuff on the YouTube, and we'll put it out to it as well. Definitely check it out. Very interesting stuff.
Go check it out. And we're gonna do special shout out to our loyal listeners. So thank you for bearing with us. So thank you for listening to us ramble about Milan. So shout out to Doa and Adri. Shout out to my friend Moby. Thank you for listening to our episodes. JC. Wally, thank you for coming on and being a guest. We appreciated that. Justin as well for making some very, very good points. We'd love to have you two on sometime later. And thank you, Farinho, for we loved having you here. Thank you for chatting. It was an absolute
thank
pleasure.
You.
And as well, it was a pleasure having you. And as well as Matt's brother Ben. So thank you for your lesser opinion, Ben.
And also thank you to everyone else who doesn't comment, doesn't make it apparent, evident that they're watching, because we get quite a lot of views, surprisingly. We got a lot of questions, we got a lot of interactions on Twitter, and a lot of questions. So shout out to everyone who's been giving us constructive criticism, tips, advice, making points, questions, just anything that has made this happen. So thank you very much, everyone.
I think as well, you guys have things like tips or, you know, advice or things you want us to do or not to do, always make sure you say that, because, you know, I think we all like to think of ourselves as quite approachable. So, you know, you know, we're not going to be mad. So yeah,
it runs for 30 minutes about politics. I don't get mad. Don't worry. Yeah, Matt, try and wrap it up.
Yeah, so I think this has been another good podcast. Of course, thank you to Firino for coming on. As we said, we'll leave all of his stuff in the description, his Twitter, his YouTube and all that. Thanks for coming on, been another great guest. Good discussion about a really big, huge, significant win in the league for Milan away against Roma 2-1. And yeah, covered loads of topics from the Zlatan-LeBron debate to Pioli and everything in between. So yeah, thank you everyone again for another good episode. Been really good, enjoyed it. And yeah, thank you Firino for coming on. Yeah, see you next time. Thoughts on Milan.
Thank you everyone.
Bye
bye.